Welcome to Minute Impossible. Your mission, should you choose to accept it, is to investigate with us the Mission Impossible franchise, 1 minute at a time. I'm Jonathan.
I'm Chris.
I'm Rick.
And I'm Julia.
Welcome, everybody. Happy Monday. Yay, we're here for another week of, I almost said Indiana Jones. That'd be weird, wouldn't it?
That would be weird.
She's the host with the most. She runs Bartertown. Who runs Bartertown? She runs Bartertown. It's Julia Ingram from the Mad Max Minute. Welcome, Julia.
Thank you so much for having us.
And he plays games so well, his friends want him to jump off a cliff. He's a hog riding, beard wearing, Pac-Man Royale champ himself, Rick.
Well, thank you for that introduction.
Also, husband of Julia. That's the only way you're getting on this podcast this year with someone in the same room. That's the only way. Everybody else is going to be random mixtures, but you guys get to be together. So
I don't know if you guys will appreciate this, but there are perks to sleeping with your co-host.
Don't have to tell me twice, right, Grant? Yeah,
exactly.
High five. Well, welcome, guys. We really appreciate you guys coming back for another season, Mission Impossible 2. Rick famously hadn't seen one when he did this. I know now for sure he has seen Mission Impossible 2.
Is that correct? Not only did we watch Mission Impossible 2 together, but I went the extra mile. I procured my copy of the movie through legal means, which I will admit is mostly because...
Us too. Yes. Wink, wink.
I'll admit that's mostly because Pirate Bay was down on the day that I went to get this movie. So we actually did just buy it through YouTube.
Well, if it makes you feel better, Chris owns it like 7 times.
Yeah, so exactly.
He's bought it more times than needs the legal.
Oh, so he just made up for everybody. There you go.
Yeah, exactly. I've bought I was telling somebody the other day, I bought the entire Mission Impossible franchise, almost as much as I've bought Die Hard, Star Wars, and something else. But yeah, almost, and Indiana Jones.
Because every time they come out with a new one,
I buy it.
They have new technology, so they're like, well, this is now 4K.
So I've got like a, well, actually, with the first Mission Impossible, I've got a VHS, a Laserdisc, a DVD, an HD DVD, a Blu-ray, and now a 4K and a digital. So yeah.
Too much.
Got to catch them all.
But it's not like Star Wars, though. I've got like Japanese laser discs and American laser discs and full screen, widescreen. Yeah, that's a mess with Star Wars. Yeah.
This minute begins with Thandie Newton as Naya being car chased by our hero, Ethan Hunt, and ends with women drivers. Am I right?
Falling off a cliff.
This scene. Let me just say, I'm not happy with this whole minute. It completely does a 180 on what they've already created. Naya, in the previous week, seems like a badass.
Yeah.
And in 1 minute, they completely... I know Julia's going to have opinions on this.
I do have so many opinions. And I'm glad that you said that you don't like this minute. That makes me feel less bad about absolutely hating the minute that I was given.
This minute is awful. I didn't mean to give it to you this way, but this is not how I... But I thought... Rick and I talked about this off mic. I thought it was funny that you guys have minutes that are not set in Australia, even though the rest of the movie is
in Australia.
So welcome to Seville.
Yeah.
Enjoy.
I did appreciate that there are cars in this minute, and a chase no less, because at least that's a bit closer to our normal wheelhouse.
Yeah, and they run on gasoline, so, you know, got the whole thing going on.
Mm-hmm.
And it's nice to be dealing with cars that run on gasoline again, because for the last year, we've been dealing with Mad Max Beyond Thunderdome.
These minutes, the last part of this, and then we get this week, guys, we get to see not only Naya become... Well, emasculated is the wrong word. What's it called when a woman's emasculated? What's the question. Feminine?
Feminated? I don't know.
Yes, when Naya's effeminated.
I think the term is... Naya is reduced to a sex object.
Yes.
She's reduced to a sex object and a bad driver.
And a damsel in distress at the same time.
And a victim. Yeah.
Yes, exactly.
That's what it is.
Even though she was such a badass in the last couple minutes.
So, yeah, the reduction of Naya. We got her name for the episode.
Yep. It would have been great if it had been the other way around, that she had to save Ethan, you know?
Yeah. And I went and looked at the script. I was like, hey, maybe they changed some stuff. Maybe there was some more meat to this. Nope.
Nope.
Robert Towne. Garbage human.
Academy Award winning garbage human.
Award winning writer of weak women roles.
Oh, that is so depressing.
I mean,
Well, he was.
It is, because the first, you guys watch this movie, the scene in the Seville mansion, she's on point. She's like, you know, giving eyes to, like, she's in charge.
She's, definitely.
It felt like she
was infiltrating. Charge. She's breaking through doors in time with the dancers and whatnot, getting into that really fancy bathroom all on her own.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but then it turns out that Ethan had control over her the whole time.
Yeah, yeah, but that's because Ethan's a dick.
Well, Ethan is a dick.
In this movie, this is, yeah, well, he's a beautiful dick. Where are we going with this?
That's a good question.
Robert Towne completely victimizes her, and she doesn't even get her power back for 40 minutes, maybe?
At least, because she becomes like a sex toy between the antagonist and the protagonist the whole time. It's like ridiculous.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, that was from the first 6 minutes of the movie. We learned that she has a relationship with Ambrose. So we knew that she was going to be involved, but I literally didn't think it was going to be them mooning at each other. I mean, we'll get to it.
Yeah.
We'll get to it. But there's a whole thing. Like, Ambrose is really into her, and she's not there for any other reason.
No.
Ick. Ick. Let's talk about the setup of this shot. They're still on the small road in Seville, driving her over the around the ocean. Out of nowhere, she's not looking at the road, and Ethan's like, "Look at the road, look at the road, and look where you're going." And she starts screaming, driving up on the banks of the sides. He comes around and hits her car. He caused this, right?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, definitely.
Completely.
He caused this. From the script, it actually says, this is called a 540-degree spin. That's not a thing. I don't know what that is. It says in there, it says, Ethan hits her car, and they go into a 540-degree spin. I'm like, no. Okay, I'm sure the production people were like, I don't know what you're talking about. And we get our third slow-motion shot of the movie.
Gross.
You don't like the slow motion, Julia?
Slow motion is fine. But what are we, 20 minutes into the movie and this is the third time it's been used?
Oh, this is like the least time it's going to be used.
Yeah.
Oh, it's going to ramp up exponentially by the end of the movie.
I think about 60% of this movie is slow motion, so, you know.
Well, they needed to extend the runtime a little bit.
Right.
Yeah.
Now, Julia, had you seen this? I know Rick had not seen it before. Had you seen this one before, like in the movie theater?
Well, certainly not in the movie theater. I thought that I hadn't, which is, I'm pretty sure, what I reported to you when we were watching the first movie.
Yeah, let's go check the tapes.
But now that I have seen it with Rick the other day, I'm pretty sure I had seen it before. Everything felt very familiar. Like, I knew what was going to happen.
You're a smart person and you probably just knew.
Yeah.
Yeah. You're like, well, okay, this the storyline in this movie is not hard. Like, whoa, it's not an M. Night Shyamalan twist.
No.
they go into a 540 spin, they spin around, and then slow motion, we watch the long, beautiful locks of Tom Cruise, our hero Ethan Hunt, and the beautiful hair of Thandie Newton as they lock eyes in this 540 degree spin. Their cars go careening off the edge, her car more so. In the script, there's more detail in that they twist, but then her car becomes free of his. And then her car, like, kind of hits the embankment, and he thinks she's fine. And then he gets there and sees that she is dangling from the car door.
Hmm.
And in this, they're together, and he notices she literally – how does she fall out of the car?
Well, she's not wearing a seatbelt.
The door opens. Yeah.
I think she stops with such force that her body is thrown against the door hard enough. How? I don't know. She weighs like 105 pounds, slams against the door hard enough to open it, and she flies out.
It's not a very good image for the Audi TT Roadster. When you have an expensive car like that, you expect a level of safety that this movie does not give you. Maybe
they should be a little asterisk in the bottom corner, like, doors do not open.
Yeah, maybe it's all of the side swiping she does. But if I'm sitting here as a potential Audi customer, now let's get one thing right. I'm never going to be able to afford an Audi Roadster like the one we see in this movie. But if I were sitting here thinking, oh, That's an attractive looking vehicle. I wonder if I would like to purchase said vehicle. And then I see this scene and how easily the doors just fly open when you're half hanging over a cliff. I'm like, you know what? Maybe I'll go with a different brand.
Oh no, you've lost a customer, Audi. Rick just watched a movie from 2000. He's decided to not buy your car.
And you probably could afford the car now. I mean, you know.
Oh yeah, the 1999 model was famous for doors falling
open. Yeah, I think there was a total recall on it too, so you know.
Wrong movie, wrong show. Yeah,
that's right. Wu says in the commentary track for this that they had it planned out for more cars to be on the road and like cars flipping over and like going full Michael Bay with it. So I'm kind of surprised that he didn't go full Michael Bay with it.
That's one thing I do like about Mission Impossible movies. Yeah. There's very little collateral damage.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think back. I'm going through it in my head right now. Other than the people that are ever in the room or in the scene, they don't really involve other people in massive things. Okay, yes, they do blow up the Kremlin.
Yeah, yes.
Does involve a lot of people, but that was the bad guys. I was trying to think of like the IMF doing something where, they drive through a coffee shop or, you know, they impact regular humans. Normally they don't.
No, their job is to stop regular humans from even knowing they exist or that these problems happen, you know, sort of like the Men in Black, you know. Now, the other thing I wanted to bring up about this is that this is the first time we start to hear the gladiator-esque score from Hans Zimmer in these moments when they're spinning around. And he uses Lisa Gerrard, who he co-wrote the Gladiator score with and just won an Oscar for.
Is she saying stuff?
Yeah, this whole sound is right out of Gladiator. I mean, it's almost exactly the Gladiator score.
Is she making words, or is it like Duel of the Fates?
I think it's a little bit of...
Is it kind of a...
Those are words too, gibberish? But... No, that was like Egyptian or something like that. Sanskrit, that's what it was. Sanskrit.
It's not something that we're supposed to know.
No, I don't think it is. No, but it is basically the exact same score as Gladiator, almost to a T.
It is. Yeah. Those of you that like Gladiator, it's the song that they play every time he plays with those little figurines.
Yeah.
And he's thinking about his family he's thinking about, and he's touching the wheat on his way to the afterlife.
Yeah. I mean, they just it's come been off a while of,
since I've seen that movie.
Gladiator came out probably, maybe a month before this, or four weeks before this movie came out, probably. So they were like right back to back with each other. And so, Zimmer and Gerard were working, and Zimmer does that. You know, he uses the people that he's used in one score on the next score because they're basically being composed next to each other. So, but yeah, I mean, I think they use it pretty well in this movie as a whole. But it is the whole time I've watched it the first time, even now, still it makes me think of Gladiator.
I wonder if people noticed it a lot at the time, because I know I never put it together.
Yeah,
and I saw both those movies. I own both those movies legally. Yeah. and I don't know. I don't know that I would have noticed that they were the exact same music and just been like, oh yeah.
Well, they're not the exact same music, but they certainly sound exactly the same.
Sure.
Yeah. You know.
You guys notice?
Well, I don't think about Gladiator all that often, and I think about Hans Zimmer even less. I'm not the kind of person that will just sit here and listen for a composer. I'm bad that way.
All right. And then this is, once again, going back to our cliffhanger comments from a couple weeks ago, this is yet another cliffhanger hand up. I actually tried to look for famous hand reaching out moments from movies. Guess what? There's a billion of them.
Of course.
So I wanted a list. I wanted like a top 10 list of like grabbing someone from saving them. I couldn't find one. It's too tropey.
Yeah.
So yeah, he saves Nala, grabs her by the hand. He jumps over the car. Bad idea, by the way. Don't, if this ever happens to you all out there, Mission Impossible will not be held responsible if you try and jump into another car that is hanging off a cliff and you fall to your
death. It only works if your name is Tom Cruise or Ethan Hunt. I mean, really.
Well, he's a wee man. He weighs the same amount Thandie Newton weighs.
Yeah, maybe like 10 pounds more.
Fun fact, they shared costumes during the movie.
Oh, but he looks fabulous in that little black dress that she's wearing.
Well, he was actually supposed to wear that little black dress, and she decided, no, I need to wear it. So he had to turn it over to her. So, you know.
Makes sense.
You've got to be really careful, especially on this cliff, because this cliff has already claimed, I think, two other people. Because in the shot where that roadster is skidding towards the edge, you see a couple of memorial crosses stuck into the ground, and this car wipes those out. So, first of all, dangerous cliff. Second of all, I feel really bad for the family that erected those memorial crosses, because they're going to be driving down that road, see all these skid marks in the dirt and the broken down wall, and be like, oh, where's the memorial cross for Manny and
Manny.
Juju or something like that. I don't know.
Manny and Juju.
I'm not good at coming up with names off the top of my head.
Especially Spanish names, you know.
So Manny and Juju are dead. No, I think it's this is where Benji, later on his team, they come in and they covered up the other IMF guys, the bag men. They come in kind of John Wick style. You pay them with gold coins and they clean everything up and put everything back the way it was. I can't wait for that, because that I have so much to talk about. The team that actually puts everything back together after an IMF team does cause damage, the small amount of damage they do cause, I can't wait to talk about the infrastructure of the IMF later on. This is almost the trade routes of Star Wars. I cannot wait to talk about treaties and trade routes of IMF.
So I have a theory as to why Naya freaked out when she suddenly found herself staring straight at a Land Rover.
Why?
Even though Delos has really good robot technology, they are robots that are used to being in a Wild West setting. And so while Naya was really good at doing all of that thiefy walking around stuff, she gets into this situation where suddenly her programming's like, Land Rover, I don't know what to do. Better scream and swerve. That's my theory.
So you're going to be the first person to start acting in that she's a Westworld robot.
Oh, absolutely.
Moment.
Absolutely.
Okay, good. Okay, good. Good. Yes.
Really? He's good. The first?
He is the first.
Yeah. We've mentioned Westworld before, but not that she's the robot from Westworld.
That she is still the, well, yes. If she's a robot, okay, for the rest of the movie, we got to figure out who isn't a robot. There's going to be a lot of people in this movie, and we're going to have to talk about each one. Ving Rhames, that guy who plays the Australian guy.
Billy.
Australian nobody, for lack of a better term. I mean, this guy is a nobody.
He directed Swim Fan.
Okay, like I said, he's a nobody.
You're going to lose that demographic of Swim Fan fans.
I can't believe Jonathan said that about my favorite movie.
You know, there's probably somebody who's actually saying that right now.
No one is.
I've seen that movie.
I'm safe. Oh, yeah, me too. Julie, I'm with you. I think I haven't seen that movie, but if I went and watched it, I probably have seen that movie.
Yeah, exactly.
I start watching it going... Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
I have seen that. Okay. Like me in Mission Possible 2.
That happened with me at that movie where for lack of a better term, it's the Chubby Rain movie in a high school where, like, aliens come down in, like, fat rain. It's a real movie, and they, like, take over the school.
The faculty?
The faculty.
The Robert Rodriguez
movie? Yeah, where the teachers are aliens.
I had thought I had not seen that movie, and then I was watching it, and I went, I have seen this movie. I know what's going to happen. I was so mad. I was like, ugh, that's a waste of time twice.
Yeah, it's funny. I was watching the remake of Invasion of the Body Snatchers the other night, and my son comes in. He's like, oh, how did this happen? I'm like, oh, they came down in the rain. He's like, was it Chubby Rain?
That's all I think about now. Anytime there's aliens and rain, I'm like,
a chubby rain.
That sounds like a lesser known Prince song. Or if Weird Al had ever been allowed to cover Prince, yep. That's the Prince parody song that Weird Al would have done.
Yep, Chubby Rain.
Or Chubby Weird Al had been allowed, Rain. Chubby
if he'd
Rain.
Been allowed to cover that, what's his face, that Chocolate Rain kid.
Yeah.
It would be Chubby Rain.
It would have been the theme song for Bowfinger, you know?
All right, well, we've gone off the rails. Let's get back on the rails.
We've gone off the rails like Naya did.
Yeah, we're going to talk some tech of the app this episode. So hope you guys have yours ready. Here we go.
I do.
All right, tech of the app. Who wants to go first? Rick, Julia?
Do you want number one or number two?
Oh, I came up with my own.
Oh, okay, cool.
Oh.
Go for it. Go for it, Julia.
My tech of the app is that stupid slow motion camera effect that's just going to rear its ugly head over and over again. But it does look pretty impressive in this minute with the hair, I guess.
I understand why he likes it. It's a cool effect. It just, you can't use it tonally every 5 minutes.
Don't tell Dr. John Woo. He doesn't think there's an axis, so he certainly can use it. You know?
Yeah, I love it. I think it's hilarious. Like, when it happens, it takes me out of the movie. And I just, like, my eyes roll back into my head so far. I'm just like, oh, that's a good one. Rick, what about you?
I have to go with the magnets that are built into the side of those Audi cars mm-hmm. that allow them to attach to another car mid-spin. Although it might just be that the magnet is built into the Porsche 911. It's one or the other. Whatever car has the giant magnet that allows it to attach to another car, that's the tech I'm going with.
I'm going to go with the platform that those cars are obviously are really on that are spinning them. Because there is obviously a platform that is spinning them. And I mean, I saw the behind the scenes stuff, and they put them on like a spinning platform that spun them around like that. So I can't imagine what that actually like. I mean, I saw the effect, but I can't imagine what the actual platform and how they pulled it across was done. Cause that's some crazy stuff there that, yeah. So I'm going with the platform.
Can you imagine being Tom Cruise or Tandy Newton and having to just sit on that platform in a car spinning around and around and around, take after take?
And they probably sat on it for like hours too. That's the crazy part.
Yeah.
I know. Sounds awful. I mean, I my tech of the app is, I guess, yeah, it's the cars. It's kind of a mix between Julia and Rick's. It's the fact that they are spinning together.
Yeah, so I said it's a platform. They're on a platform that's spinning the cars.
Right, but that's in the slow motion.
No, that's the whole time. They've got like in the wide shot too.
So in this wide shot at second 44, they're on a platform and the platform moves too?
The platform is spinning them.
Right, it's spinning them, but does the platform have wheels underneath it that allows
them to roll? Yeah, they're like pulling the platform and it's like being towed.
Oh, well, then I guess I have the same one Chris does, which is the platform that spins it. A car spinning platform is definitely, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
I thought they just somehow got the cars to do that. Cars can do this, right? I assume.
I don't know. Ask the Mad Max people, man.
We've never seen
it. If anybody can do it for real, it's George Miller. So,
with the right stunt driver, cars can do an awful lot.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
If you guys had gone first to talk about the car spinning, my backup tech of the app would have been the super spy shampoo that Ethan was using.
Yeah.
That's
IMF approved, and only they get them.
Mm-hmm.
Just so you all know, that's what Rick's hair really looks like. It's beautiful. He shaves it off and out because he knows people hate him so much, but with his hair like that. So he's been like, fine, I'll just shave it off.
Because he can't have better hair than me.
No.
He's a gentleman.
He's a kind and considerate husband.
That's a great place to end this episode and come back tomorrow for more, more close talking, for lack of a better term. So, we're going to end here. You guys, it's Monday, so it's plug day. Why don't you guys plug away on your podcast and tell us what you guys are working on?
As was discussed at the top of today's episode, we are from the Mad Max Minute, which you can find on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, the Spotify, you know, all of those. Just search Mad Max Minute. You'll find it. Or you could just go to our website, which is madmaxminute.com. Connect with us on social media through Twitter at Mad Max Minute or Facebook by searching for Mad Max Minute, which will let you find our listener page, Mad Max Minute Beyond Microphone.
Cool. Yeah, you should definitely listen to it.
Yeah.
We were on in the Thunderdomes.
Mm-hmm. Yes, we were on the Thunderdome.
So yeah, definitely go listen to it. It's a fun show.
Yep.
You can find us at all our normal places. MinuteImpossible.com has all of our links, merch, Patreons, episodes. Go listen to our entire first season of 110 episodes or this season, which is now at 21 episodes. Thank you again for listening, and we'll talk to you guys tomorrow. Until then, I've been Jonathan.
I've been Chris.
I've been Rick.
And I've been Julia.
This minute will self-destruct.
See you next time on the show. It's done. It was so fun. Thanks for listening to Minute Impossible. 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 Impossible.